Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I want to thank the listeners on their computer, people who may be coming in the chat room, and people who might be listening on their phone. Thank you very much for joining us. Today we're going to be talking about the AIDS epidemic in the African American community. This is a very troubling matter. I'm an African American woman, and I am very concerned at the rates that African Americans are being diagnosed. Currently, based on CDC fact sheet, as of 2005, 49% of the people diagnosed with HIV/AIDS in 2005 were African Americans. 49%. In terms of women diagnosed with HIV/AIDS, it was 64%. In 2005, African-American women diagnosed with HIV/AIDS. This is very troubling. It has not gone away, people. It is still here with us, and we still need to take precautions. I have a guest this morning, Amina McCann. She is the Supervisor of Prevention Programs at Babashi. Welcome, Amina.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
I just want to read a little article. This is from the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. This is dated June 1, 2001. On June 5, 1981, MMWR, which is the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, published a report of 5 cases of pneumocystis carinii pneumonia, PCP, among previously healthy young men in Los Angeles. All of the men were described as homosexuals. 2 had died. Local clinicians and the Epidemic Intelligence Service officer stationed at the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health prepared the report and submitted it to MMWR publication in early May 1981. Before the publication, MMWR editorial staff sent the submission to CDC experts in parasitic and sexually transmitted diseases. The editorial noted that accompanied the published report stated that the case history suggested a cellular immune dysfunction related to a common exposure, and a disease acquired through sexual contact. The report prompted additional case reports from New York City, San Francisco, and other cities. At about the same time, the CDC's Investigation Drug Unit, the sole distributor of pentamidine, the therapy for PCP, began to receive requests for the drugs from physicians also to treat young men. That was in 1981. We are in 2009, and this epidemic has not gone away. This epidemic is not just about someone being a homosexual. This crosses whether you're homosexual or heterosexual. This crosses whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're black or white or Latino or Asian. It crosses everywhere. It doesn't care what you look like, how tall you are, how short you are. Okay? This is affecting heterosexuals as well. And as I stated earlier, based on the CDC stats in 2005, 49% of the people diagnosed with HIV/AIDS were African American. What is going on with the African American community? Are we not seeing the ads? Are we not listening to the precautions by the TV, the bus station ads? What is going on with our community that we are not listening, we are not taking precautions? Mm-hmm. Amina, I want to ask you, what are some of the reasons that you come upon of why African Americans are getting diagnosed at such a high rate with HIV/AIDS?
Well, excuse me, I think that one of the some of the things that I come across is it varies. One of the things is that some African Americans still have a distrust. They do not trust the medical system. Some comments that are made are, well, I think the government gave it to us. They just want to wipe us out. Or it's not going to happen to me. Some people still have that invincibility that, you know, they cannot get this disease. Mm. The majority of the reason why I think that African Americans are getting HIV at a higher rate is solely due to not being educated or not paying attention to the messages. So when someone comes in our testing room to get tested for HIV and we say, well, what do you know about HIV? And they'll say, well, I know it can kill you. That's the number one answer I get. So they know that it can kill you, but when you get into their behaviors, like unprotected sex or drug use,
not getting tested,
they're not
drug
protecting
use.
Themselves. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when I say to them, well, if you use a condom or if you don't share your needles or maybe you should practice abstinence from sex and drugs, they'll say, okay, but that's not realistic for me.
Mm.
So if that's probably out of my 5.5 years at Babashi, that's probably the number one answer I get.
Wow. You mentioned that some people say, well, the government did it to us. Let's talk about that for a second. Where did HIV come from? I'm looking at an article from Discover magazine.
Right.
By it's about this virologist, Beatrice Hahn. She's been fighting AIDS for a while, and she said the question they asked her was, why do we need to understand the origin of HIV?
Mm-hmm.
It's more than 40 million people are now estimated to have HIV or AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's make that clear. There are different distinctions in terms of people being diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I guess, three different levels where you could be diagnosed of HIV infection, but not AIDS, which is acquired immune deficiency syndrome, okay?
Right.
Two, a diagnosis of HIV infection and later a diagnosis of acquired immune deficiency system, because people, you can be walking around with this in your system, not know it, not have any symptoms, but you still are HIV positive. And thirdly, you could be diagnosed with HIV HIV infection and have AIDS all at the same time, so that your immune system has already started to break down and, you know, battle with what's going on in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make that clear again. You can be diagnosed HIV infection but not have AIDS.
Yes.
But that means, my understanding, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can still transmit it to someone else.
Yes, and that is something that often comes up as well, even with people who are living with the virus or even those who are trying to learn their status. We let them know that you can have HIV for, you may hear numbers like 10 years, 15 years, and never know it.
Mm.
And the one thing that that scares us is the people who are infecting people with HIV are usually the ones who don't know it.
They're unaware.
They're unaware of the fact that they have HIV. Therefore, they're practicing unsafe sex or sharing needles or whatever the case may be. Those are the people that we're trying to find, those who do not know their status. The ones who know their status, not to say that they don't do this, but it's much more scarier for someone to be walking around not knowing and they're practicing unsafe behaviors.
Yes.
So going back, I wanted to touch on the origins of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And I get into this conversation a lot on, well, where do you think it comes from, or you think the government gave it to us or whatever. I always mm-hmm. say to people, I don't get into theories. I don't get into conspiracy theories. I don't get into you know, any science, like as far as the simian immunodeficiency virus, you know, you may have heard it from the monkeys.
Right. Well, that's what this article in Discover,
yeah.
They also had an article in
right.
in the New York Times with this particular
right.
virologist, and she says that the question
right.
cannot be answered.
It can't.
All we
and
can
I
say,
mm-hmm.
yeah. All
and
we
I tell
can
them
say
it doesn't
is
matter.
It, right. Because,
doesn't
you know,
matter,
it doesn't matter at
now.
This point. Right, because it's here and you need to deal with it. And, okay, so say we do find out that it was a government conspiracy and they went to go wipe out all the people in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do about it?
Right.
What are you doing about the general problems in your community overall, dealing with drugs and violence and trash and an environment? So what are you going to do about now that you all of a sudden you found out that maybe the government did something? There's nothing you can do at this moment about it other than protect yourself and educate, I believe, your friends and family and the community
mm-hmm.
that this is still here, and then support people who may have gotten infected, because it's not a happy disease. It's not, you know, that you got a lollipop. You know, this is a horrible disease that can really break somebody down to the point of death, yes. But there are treatments, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I do want to just read that one paragraph from this article about this virologist. It says that all we can say with certainty is that SIV, the simian immunodeficiency virus carried by chimps in West Central Africa, is the closest relative to HIV-1. We know that you don't get these infections by looking at apes or by petting their heads. It would require blood exposure. And we know that bushmeat hunting is a traditional activity in these countries and has been for hundreds, probably of hundreds of thousands of years. So that is a plausible route of transmission. Mm-hmm. But again, as Ms. McCann, Amina said, you know, okay, so now you know that maybe that's where it came from and, you know, it happened. But people, again, it does not just affect people in Africa. It does not just affect homosexuals. It does not just affect men. It's affecting everyone. As a matter of fact, like I stated earlier, 64% of women, 64% of the women being diagnosed with HIV/AIDS are African American. But fortunately, because so many people on it, like Amina, Babashi, the National Minority AIDS Council, and several thousands of other organizations around the world to try to fight this, there are medicines out to help you now. And even for women, they're just came out in February. This was a report, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Anti-HIV gel shows promise in a large-scale study in women. An investigational vaginal gel intended to prevent HIV infection in women have demonstrated encouraging signs of success in a clinical trial conducted in Africa and the United States. Amina, are you familiar with this anti-HIV gel?
Yes, that's the microbicide studies.
Okay.
And it sounds very promising, and I know that they've been studying this for years, trial and error. And I think that, you know, once these researchers and scientists finally find what, you know, find the make this thing work,
right,
I still want women to not become reckless mm-hmm. and thinking that just because this gel is available, that if I use this, then, you know,
everything's fine. Right.
No, you're
right.
Not. You know, you still...
Nothing is 100%.
Nothing's 100%, just like a condom mm-hmm. or birth control. If it's mm-hmm. not done correctly and consistently, then you're going to put yourself at risk. So, you know, there still is a lot of education that needs to be, you know, put out there before this thing could come to play. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the let's talk about detection. It's very easy to find out whether or not what your status is. There are rapid oral tests,
mm-hmm.
And then there are blood tests. Are there any other tests that are out there to help determine your HIV status?
That's mainly it. There's what we call conventional and rapid testing. Mm-hmm. Usually, with the conventional, you either have an oral specimen where we swab the mouth. Or you'll get a blood sample.
And
the oral
doesn't hurt at all. It's what, 10 minutes of your time?
It's just a second.
Yes.
You know, just swab your mouth and that's it.
So if you people out there are afraid of needles mm-hmm. and, you know, you're wincing because I don't want to go get a needle, I don't want somebody to take blood, or if they give me the needle, then I'm going to get something from the needle. Well, here is there's no more excuses, people. You can go get a cotton swab in your mouth, no pain, no needle, no nothing. 2 seconds of your time to find out what your status is. Go ahead. You were saying there was something else? Or?
Oh, the rapid test, we can take that actually in three different ways. So, one, we can swab the mouth again. We can take a drop, like a teeny weeny drop of blood out the finger,
mm-hmm.
or also draw blood from the arm. So there's many ways that we can get a sample to screen whether or not someone's been infected.
And how long does it take for the rapid oral test to come back, the results?
At Babashi, anyway, we use one, get your results in 20 minutes, but some tests
minutes.
Are available in 10.
Okay. 20 minutes that you can find out your status. So it's not about I don't have time
mm-hmm.
to do this. And in terms of the blood test, how long does it take for those results to come back normally?
7 to 10 days.
7 to 10 days. Okay, so with the blood test now, my understanding is you can get tested now, but you still probably want to do a follow-up test in a couple of months, about 3 months or so. Is that correct?
Yes.
Just to make sure that, because sometimes it could take a second to, I guess, register with your immune system.
Right. It can take anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 months for HIV to develop antibodies in your system.
Antibodies, okay. And in terms of prevention, I know you guys do a lot of work with that. We talked about using condoms. There's also not just condoms for men, there are condoms for women that are available, yes?
Yes.
Abstaining, also finding out your partner's status before you engage in sexual activity with them, whether you're a man or a woman. And unfortunately, we have, I think, a large number of women getting HIV through heterosexual contact or drug use, and these people are uncommitted, and some of them married relationships. What do you do if you're in a marriage and then you find out that your partner is HIV positive? I mean, have people come to Babashi with that issue?
I definitely heard of that issue. I haven't directly dealt with it myself. It's more situational. It's kind of like, did your partner have it before you were married and they didn't know when they found out?
Mm-hmm.
Or did they get it during the marriage?
Mm.
So I think
that's a whole other issue. But
yeah.
The question I guess really is, if you're married, people say, well, I don't need to get checked out. But I know in the African American community and other communities, the issue of men being on the down low, which if you're not familiar with that term, are men who are walking around saying they're heterosexual and they're having relationships with women, yet they're still engaging in sexual activity with men,
mm-hmm.
unbeknownst to their partners or their friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
So they call it on the down low.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another way that a lot of women are getting infected, because they're with people who are not being honest with them about their sexuality. And I don't have any judgments about people's sexuality, but I'm concerned about you infecting other people because of your risky behavior.
Well, you know, in my experience with women coming in here to get tested, and they talk about the fact that they know that their partner is unfaithful,
mm-hmm.
I say to them as a counselor, you know, you cannot just go by your test results alone. Your
mm-hmm.
results are not enough. So a conversation needs to take place between you and your partner about sex, protection, and getting tested. And that's something that a lot of women and what we see African-American women are a little uncomfortable to do, because
mm-hmm.
that man may be their provider.
Right.
That man may be their only family.
Mm-hmm.
So to cause any kind of disruption in that can be vital.
Right.
So it's kind of it's a delicate situation, and you have to handle it on a case-by-case basis. I can't give one blanket answer to all women
mm-hmm.
Because every woman's situation is different. The only thing we can say is that condom usage, if you know that your partner is unfaithful, whether he's having sex with another man or a woman, that part is universal.
Mm.
Now, we do put heavy emphasis with the female condom, because the woman has total control of the situation, meaning she could put that condom on 6 hours before she has sex.
Okay.
Okay, and a lot of women, when they find that information out, they're like, really?
So people say, well, you know, I want to be spontaneous.
Right.
Well, there you go. 6 hours before,
exactly.
You're prepared to engage. And life doesn't have to be horrible or scary.
Right.
There are tools out there to help us deal with this matter. Let's talk about the treatments, because, okay, people aren't getting tested, unfortunately, or they're getting tested when it's too late, or they're finding out they're already infected. We talked about this anti-HIV gel. I see signs for pills. What are some of these medicines, and how do they work? Are you familiar with that area in terms of the different types of medicines that are out there?
Yeah, I'm definitely familiar with that. There are, not to get too technical,
right,
but
you want to try to make it as easy
keep
as possible
it simple
for people to understand.
But there are medications available for someone who's newly diagnosed or someone who's been living with it for a while, there's a number of regimens that's available, some that are very convenient. I mean, some of the regimens are one pill a day or one pill twice a day. So these pills are definitely helping people live a lot longer. And so there's meds that, you know, that goes from a pill all the way down to a shot. There's like a needle that you can take.
Now, what if somebody needs help finding medicine they can't pay for, they don't have health insurance, is that something Babashi can help them with? Because what should they do? Is there a number they can call?
Well, they definitely, if they are a client of Babashi, if they become a client of Babashi, they will have a case manager that will help them link them to those entitlements such as health insurance. Usually if you don't have a job, you may get public assistance through the Department of Public Assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And Pennsylvania is very good with that in terms of once you're on Medicaid and you choose your HMO, they cover many of the medications that are available to them. So there is there should never be a problem in terms of getting medication if you don't have insurance, because we can help get that. That's not a problem.
And so now talking about, you said that the Department of Public Welfare has services. Do you feel that this new administration, Obama's administration, has their pulse, has their ear to the pulse of this AIDS epidemic in terms of the African American community, or in terms of the nation as a whole? Do you feel that Obama administration is going to be supportive or put more money and funding toward this epidemic?
I think that Obama is, and the administration as a whole, I think right now their ear probably isn't on it because we are dealing with this economic crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I think eventually it will get there. But as I remember in his campaign and even in his first month in office or whatever, I didn't hear much in the way of HIV/AIDS.
Well, he did make one statement in I think it was August 2008 about, you know, he did want to support. But he and McCain, this is before he actually became president, you know, probably to say, you know, we're aware of it and we're going to try to help it. But like you said, we're in the middle of a financial crisis.
Right,
so.
And I don't think that he's ignoring it.
Yeah.
I think that right now, as it stands, I think the economy is probably his thing right now. But I think that in time, sooner than later, I believe that, you know, we definitely will hear more from the administration. If not, as far as we know, they're probably doing something about it now.
In terms of Philadelphia, Babashi, for people who are listening maybe in other states, is a Philadelphia-based organization.
Mm-hmm.
And their web address is www.babashi.org, and Babashi is BEBASHI.org.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of public policy here in Pennsylvania, do you feel that is there something that the local government, that the mayor, the governor can do to make people more aware? You're saying that people aren't educated. I mean, how much can we do? I mean, I've seen ads on the bus. I've seen ads on the street and billboards on the highway. I've seen things on the internet. I mean, because people are very much into the computer now, and we have Facebook and Twitter and blog talk radio and all these social media avenues and tools. I mean, what can the government do to say, hello, this is still here, you need to protect yourself? What is it they can do that they're not doing now?
I think that aside from the billboards and the posters that you may see, I think that what she just said, like saying hello, kind of getting more in their face, I think is too passive. One conversation I had recently is that this HIV/AIDS epidemic is not a normal part of our conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And until it becomes a more normal part of our conversations, meaning that just the way us girls may talk about our hair and our shoes, we don't talk as easily and readily about HIV/AIDS. And the same goes for our local government. Not to say that there's a lot of initiatives out there, whether it's funded or not. But, you know, I think that our local government just have to be more in the face of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And
what
that,
about
we are here.
What about the young people? I mean, there are young people. I mean, this goes to the issue, I think, of our society in terms of sexuality and sexual issues are afraid to talk about that, because if we talk about it, then we're supporting certain behaviors. Mm-hmm. But my opinion is, it's here. Just like we said, well, we don't know where AIDS came from. It's a conspiracy, this or that. Whatever, people, it's here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to care whether the government brought it or you brought it. Because you know what? People in the government are getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Their kids are getting it. Their relatives, their friends down the hall. It doesn't matter how much money you have. Of course, in most studies, people have better education and higher economic status. In most areas of life, seem to do better, maybe because of their education, because of their money, maybe they can get more treatments and things of that nature, but it still does not discriminate.
Right.
If you're making $600,000 a year and you go out and have unprotected sex with somebody,
mm-hmm.
and they're HIV positive, you're going to become HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter about that. But I want to mention that on Tuesday, March 10th, is National Women and Girls HIV AIDS Awareness Day.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Department of Human Services, Office of Women's Health, is the lead for this day. And the theme for this year is HIV is right here at home.
Mm-hmm.
HIV is right here at home. And I think that's what I'm trying to say today to people, that it's right here on your doorstep, people. And unless you're absolutely abstaining from sexual, and this is oral sex too, yes, Amina?
Yes, it is.
Oral sex is sexual contact.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a man and a woman, or a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, oral sex is sex.
Mm-hmm.
It is not sex. It's not intercourse, but it's still a sexual act.
Mm-hmm.
And it still has bodily fluids that, you know, can reach an individual. National Women and Girls HIV Awareness Day, again, is March 10th. And I just wanted to say also on February 7th, I believe, was National HIV African American, like related to African Americans Day on February.
Black AIDS Awareness Day.
National Black AIDS Awareness Day. That was on February 7th.
Mm-hmm.
But just like Black History Month, we can't just think about this in February. we need to think about this all year round. Now, interesting article. This just, I found March 5th. This is just on Thursday. This is from the AHIP, America's Health Insurance Plans. I get their newsletter about all different kinds of health issues. But on March 5th, the Star Tribune stated, you researchers find way to block HIV. Now, as far as I know, there's no cure, but it's something on the horizon. It says, using a common food additive, U of M researchers were able to stop the spread of the virus that causes AIDS in monkeys. And again, AIDS is acquired immune deficiency syndrome in monkeys. They hope it may be a potential weapon in the worldwide epidemic. Scientists at the University of Minnesota have found a way to block transmission of the virus that causes AIDS in animals, raising hopes of a potential breakthrough in the battle against the worldwide epidemic. Now, this is not a cure, but it is a possible way. Now, this food additive is found, I believe it's saying, in ice cream and gum and different other things that we eat every day, but I guess they've manipulated to try to help with AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure, are you aware of that? This is from the...
No, I haven't heard of that.
I'll send you the article. It just came out on Thursday, so it's just groundbreaking news here. And I want to mention that, you know, young people, for moms and dads out there, in the issue of talking about the birds and bees, with this epidemic, and as African Americans, you cannot delay the conversation. I mean, you're seeing young people come in your office, yes, for STD testing and other things.
Oh, yeah, every day.
And what do they say to you? They say, do they think it's an adult disease? Do they think it's, like you said, it's not going to touch them?
No, you know what? I mean, I think most youth have a invisible thing going on, but you'd be surprised that a lot of them, they totally understand what they're doing to put themselves at risk. The problem comes in is that they don't have anyone to talk to about it. So, for instance, they can't go home and talk to their mother or their father or whoever's raising them. mm-hmm. and say, I'm if it's a girl, I'm with this boy and we're having sex, but, you know, he don't like to put the condom on, and I'm kind of scared that I could have something. So while mm-hmm. they're not off to shaking that leg, like, oh, my God, what am I, myself going to come out to me, you know,
mm-hmm.
We're only with them for a certain amount of time. They still have to go home. So I feel that a lot of parents are very uncomfortable, and if they want to save their children, they got to set that aside and make sex and the consequences of sex, again, normal. Part of their mm-hmm. conversation has to be, you know, you can't say to your kids, oh, you can say anything you want to me, but the minute they say something you don't like, then you're going to shun them. It can't mm-hmm. work that way. Sex is going to come in their life. They're going to have sex. They're going to have questions. They're going to want to explore. And sex is more than a feeling. There's also risk involved. And as a counselor, like right now we have a service called one-to-one risk reduction counseling for youth. And we'll meet with them for about 3 sessions at about 45 minutes to an hour apiece just to help them understand, okay, you're having sex and you're not using condoms, so we're going to help you use condoms more consistently and use them right. So we're not just going to tell you to use it right. We're going to show you with models and things like that. And that's something that parents need to do with their kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
actually,
just real quick, I heard a conversation with a mom who said, well, I don't know what to do with my son. I mean, he's out there having sex, but how do I talk to my son about using condoms? And it's like,
mm-hmm.
well, why don't you go and purchase an item, I'm not going to say it right now, and show him how to put it on.
Right. You have to some people are visual, and you need to be visual.
Yeah.
And I don't I'm a parent. I have a daughter, and I will tell you, she'll probably kill me, but basically when she was 10 or 11, the conversation of, you know, having a boyfriend and not having a boyfriend came up. And that's not the boyfriend, like, as an adult, think of a boyfriend, girlfriend, but, you know, something cute and they pass notes or something like that, maybe. But the point is, that was 10 or 11 years old, people. You can't wait till the child gets to high school to have a discussion with them about sex,
mm-hmm.
about this AIDS epidemic, about prevention, about detection.
Mm-hmm.
I have already spoken to my daughter about detection and test and going to get tested. And if you're going to be involved with someone, it's important that they get tested and that you know, get it tested. So you can't wait till you're in high school to talk to your children. And yes, as Amina said, try to be open. I mean, every kid goes through this. It's nothing new. I mean, people, we've been here for millions and millions of years. Mm-hmm. Every kid goes through experimenting or learning or trying to reach out and find out about sex. Some go further than others, but the point is it's in their lives and it's in their peer groups. So they're going to see it whether you stop it or not. Even if you're, you know, strict Catholic, you know, abstain till you get married, the kids are exposed to it on TV every day before 9 o'clock. They're exposed to sex.
Mm-hmm.
On the Internet, on MySpace, on Facebook, they're exposed to these things. There has to be a communication there. Amina, talk about some of the other programs that you offer. I know you mentioned about the prison program where people are in prison. That's a big issue.
Yeah, we have a program. It's a prison discharge program,
mm-hmm.
and we have a case manager in place that communicates with Pennsylvania's 24, I believe it's still 24 state correctional institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone is being released from prison and they have HIV or AIDS, they can come literally straight to Babashi from the prison to Babashi and get the services in place like a doctor, food, housing,
mm-hmm.
whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why this program is in place is because a lot of men and women who are released from prison, they don't have anything in place. Sometimes they have no home to come to. So that means if you're HIV positive or you have an AIDS diagnosis and you don't have medication, then you're running the risk of becoming sick. So our goal is to have no lapse in services, no lapse in communication, no lapse in support. So that's one of the main goals of our prison program.
And what do you, some of the programs you do with the young people, is an Excel program? Is that still going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of our programs is called HYPE, also known as Helping Young People Excel. Under that program, we go to schools, community centers, churches, whatever venue where youth are going to be, and we provide education around HIV, STDs, contraception, anything to do with sexual health, in addition to the one-to-one risk reduction counseling services, which is a short-term service, but that's a very beneficial service. And lastly, we also have a group in which we follow a curriculum which we developed ourselves. It's called SPEAK, which stands for Self-Esteem Through Power, Education, Action, and Knowledge.
Now, if somebody's interested in bringing this to their school or community center or recreation center, what's the number they can call?
If you're interested in any type of education, you can call us at 215-769-3561, and you can call us Monday through Friday from 9 to 5.
I want to thank you for coming on the show and talking about this important issue. What is something that you could tell our listeners? Again, this is an epidemic in the African-American community. 49% of the people diagnosed as of 2005 with HIV AIDS status were African-American, 49% people. And for women out there, 64% of women diagnosed were African-American. This is not a joke. This is still here. It's still here with us. It has not gone away. That was 1981. I read that article of one of the first cases to be recognized by the CDC, and we're here in 2009. Now, there is hope. There are medicines, as Amina said, and some of them are just a pill a day. And, again, you can be walking around with HIV positive status and no AIDS. Again, I'm going to say that again. You can have HIV be positive and not have AIDS. But that means you can still give the virus to someone else. It does not mean, okay, well, you know, I don't have AIDS now, nothing's happening to my immune system, whatever. I'm cool, I can still go out and do whatever I want to do. Mm-hmm. That is not the case. Okay, so what is something you could leave the listeners with today about this epidemic?
I guess to kind of reiterate what you said, that it's still here, and up until we find a cure, that in order to know your status is to get tested. And I think, like I said before, we need to make this conversation of HIV/AIDS a normal part of our conversations, because unfortunately we still have really crazy myths out here about HIV/AIDS that need to be debunked. So getting educated, getting tested, knowing your status and your partner's status is very, very important.
Yeah, you mentioned the myths. The myths are this is not a homosexual disease.
Oh, we still get the it's a homosexual disease. Oh, a man can't get it from a woman, and you can get it from a toilet seat. That's still here. You heard
that
those?
Is still here.
That's still here.
Okay,
and,
people. So we're telling you today that is not the case. You can
that
get
is not the case.
Sexual bodily fluid contact, bodily fluids, your blood,
your
saliva,
semen.
Not
just it's blood, semen, vaginal secretions, and breast milk. That's it.
And breast milk. So that's another issue, people. If you're walking around with HIV positive, say you're married and you get pregnant. Now, how does that work with the mom passing it to the child? There are drugs now that can help stop that, yes?
Well, if you are pregnant and you're HIV positive and you're in treatment, then the chances of you passing it to your child is probably less than 1%.
Okay.
But if you're HIV positive and pregnant and don't know that you're positive, then, of course, the chances are higher, especially through delivery. That's why prenatal care is very important during pregnancy, because at least as far as I know in Pennsylvania, they highly encourage HIV testing during prenatal care.
Okay. And I want to say that children are being infected, unfortunately.
Yes.
And, you know, they didn't ask for that. They didn't even get here yet, and they're having to deal with that. I mean, that's just like the issue of someone on drugs and they get pregnant and, you know, you have crack babies. I mean, if you don't want to think about yourself, then think about the life that you might be carrying around inside of you and how that's affected. And in terms of, I think, again, I go back to women because I'm a woman and, you know, that's one of my top priorities is helping women. Don't take the BS. You've got to find out what's going on with you and your partner. You've got to find out what's going on. And it's just a peace of mind. And if something happens after you get tested, you know what? I mean, I'm not going to say you know, a well, but at least you could say you tried. You did what you were supposed to do. You went and got tested. Your partner got tested. Anything can happen. I mean, people cheat, or people, at the time they got tested, no antibodies were in their system. But at least you had the conversation. At least you can feel like you have some control.
Right.
And the sooner you know, just like with any other issue like breast cancer or any other diseases, early detection is key. And what I've been reading is sometimes some doctors may not ask you to go on a drug therapy right away, depending on certain counts, I guess, antibody counts, I believe it is, or something.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So if you're afraid about, oh, God, I take all this medicine right away, that may not be the case. They may just want to monitor you.
Yeah,
but,
I know someone for 13 years, and this person's never been on meds.
Okay, so for 13 years. But that's an exception, probably, people.
Yes, yeah.
That is an exception. So, again, early detection is important because there are treatments out here, and as Amina said, a pill a day. A pill a day, people, to continue your life. You don't know what your mission is in life, and maybe, you know, you need to stick around for yourself, for your family, for your friends. I want to thank Amina for coming on the show. We only have a couple more minutes.
Okay.
Thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge. Again,
can I put one thing out there?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
This March 21st, which is a Saturday from 10 to 4, Bobashi will be at Francisville Recreation Center on 737 Francis Street for a youth health fair. There's a karaoke contest for the youth and free testing.
Excellent. Again, Bobashi's website is www.bobashi.org. And tell them the phone number again, Amina.
The number is 215-769-3561.
I want to thank Amina, and I want to thank our listeners. I see some people in the chat room. People are listening on their computers. Again, people, if you're listening to computers, don't forget to mark this show Saturday mornings with Joy Keys as your favorite, or you can also leave comments on the website. If you have any questions about the show or upcoming topics, you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, that's SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Next week, we're going to be dealing with the environment. What can we do to help the environment through recycling, through light bulbs, through the cars we use? We'll have Leanne Nurse. She's a program analyst from the Environmental Protection Agency on next Saturday at 11 a.m. I also want to mention to people that this week, coming Wednesday, March 11th, the Philadelphia Black Public Relations Society and PICO will be holding Milestones, Stories of African-American Women in the Media, Women, Politics, and PR. And special guests will be Renee Amore, president of the Amore Group, Cindy Bass, Senior Policy Advisor for Office of Congressman Chaka Fatah, and Nia Meeks, Political Media Consultant. Again, this is Wednesday, March 11, 2009, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at PICO 2301 Market Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you have any questions about the Milestone event, you can contact Felicia Phillips at 215-908-9942 or Tashira Ayers at 856-520-1214. Again, I want to thank our listeners for being on the show today and taking the time out of their weekend to listen. I want to thank Amina McCann for coming on the show talking about Bobashi and their services. Again, early detection is key, people. There are treatments to help you. Have the conversation with your children about sex, about AIDS, about STDs. Be open to them, even if you don't want to hear it. And if you don't feel comfortable, find someone close to you that you know is comfortable. Because it's going to come into your children's lives, okay? It's going to come into your children's lives, and it's in your life. It's on our doorstep. As I said, March 10th is National Women and Girls HIV/AIDS Awareness Day, and the theme for this year is HIV is right here at home. It is right here in our communities, and for African-American people, we can't have any excuses anymore. You know you see the ads. You know you see the posters. You see the things on TV. Take the time to have the conversation with yourself, with your partner, with your children. Amina, thank you so much for being on the show.
All right, thank you.
And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you very much, listeners. Next week again, 11 a.m., we'll be talking about the environment with Leanne Nurse, program analyst from the Environmental Protection Agency. Again, if you have any questions about the show, email me SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. And, again, don't forget to mark Saturdays with Joy Keys as a favorite. And you can also leave comments on the show's page, Blog Talk Radio page. Thank you again for joining us, and have a lovely weekend. I'll see you next week.